Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Obviously, front lawns are a terrible idea. I mean, Hank, what do all of these front lawns have in common? No one is using them! They're just sitting there sucking 4 billion gallons of drinking water every fracking day! Also, in order to maintain this completely unnatural plant monoculture, we use 70 million pounds of pesticides every year on our grass. Grass which, I will remind you, does not feed us! I'm sorry, Hank, but it is very hot, and just like characters in Victorian novels, the temperature reflects my temperament. 70 million pounds of pesticides a year, it's ridiculous. And the most ridiculous part is that I'm out there with them, trying to make sure that my grass looks okay so my neighbors don't get mad at me. Now, Hank, there are some advantages to lawns. Grass turns carbon dioxide into oxygen, although it's hardly the most efficient carbon sink. And there's some soil erosion benefits, although we'd all be better off if we had, like, a big mix of plants in our front yard. And we'd be better off still if we had vegetable gardens. So how did we end up with the disaster that is the front lawn? The British. That's right, Hank. We threw off their colonial yoke and said no to taxation without representation, but they got us on the lawns.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. If Mother Earth and Father Time had a baby, never mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
It's one of those mornings. It's one of those mornings.
Yeah.
I say, can I just go back to bed? Can I just roll over and... Can we try this tomorrow? Can we do this on a Monday?
I'd love to do this on a Monday.
I'd like to do this on a Monday through a Friday.
That
How's
would
that?
Be,
every day
I'd,
of the week?
I'd get out of bed a little springier, I think, during the week. But
I mean, we usually don't have enough time in the show to cover everything. You know, I mentioned last week that I need three, you know.
I know, we were getting...
Like that Ed Schultz promo. I need another show. Because, you know, if you're... Because some people complain that there's not enough gardening, and some people complain there's not enough environmentalism, mm-hmm. and some people just complain. And then some people like it.
Yeah.
And those are the people... Wait. Yeah, thank you for all you people who like listening to the show.
Well, let me ask you, was it hard to get out of bed because it was a Sunday morning, or was it hard to get out of bed because it was a cold morning?
Oh, no. It's cold. See, it's sunny. It's
sunny
beautiful.
Sunny schmunny, cold is cold.
No,
still
it's not.
Feeling.
You know what? I don't... Although I have to admit, when I hit the shower, it was, that's good. Oh, you know?
Me, it was like cocoon the blanket a little further around you and fight it. Like, no, it's not time yet. Don't make me go. Don't make me go.
Well, here's why it was hard to get up. It's because I tried to have a normal person Saturday, which does not work for me.
So we're normal and Mike Novak don't usually
no,
go together.
Yeah, you're right. That doesn't work at all. But I try, you know, I ran some errands. I had to go to the bank. I had to go to the car, the repair shop. A shout out to my my mechanic, Pete. Pete's a great guy.
Yeah.
How you doing, my friend?
Mine's Mike, and I'll be talking to him this afternoon, if not tomorrow.
Okay, because you and I could go on about car troubles here.
Oh, yeah,
here.
We sure
now,
can.
Now, this is going to be a surprise to those lovely people. Remember a month ago when my car died?
Be gentle.
Oh, I'm going to be really
oh,
gentle.
I know,
okay,
I know.
All right, because my car died. And I begged, got on the air and begged people to sell me a used car
because
I don't have any money. I can't buy a new car. I'm not going to add another $300 a month to whatever.
You got the outlet. Use it. And obviously that one was the one that worked.
And remember I told you about those wonderful people,
yes.
Martin, Charlene.
Yes.
And and Charlene's a huge listener to the show, and they might be listening right now, and they sold me a car, and it's this Camry LE.
It's a beautiful car.
It's a nifty little car.
You're so excited.
I continue to be very excited about the car. Because it's got all this little pep. It's, for a little car. And somebody told me basically that it's a stripped down Lexus.
Yes. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a working man's Lexus.
A working man's Lexus. And for me to own a Lexus is because when I see the Lexus commercials come on TV, I just scream at the tube.
Is that the one that parks itself?
Well, I tried that with my car, but no, it didn't work.
I'm like,
I just turned it on and put it in gear.
That like fascinates yet like frightens me when I see those cars do that themselves. I'm just like,
someday probably we'll have this grid and they already have the smart cars to tell you when you're too close to the But I don't even have a digital,
My fella's got the camera in the back. The camera in the back's a little GPS screen turns on and shows you what you're about to. It's the little camera.
About what you're about to hit?
Yeah. And then it goes beep, 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 like you're getting really close to something.
And then when you hit it, it says, you just hit that.
Beep, no, beep. It goes, you idiot. I told you.
You're a moron. So anyway, so I had this lovely little car that Martin Charlene sold me. So I'm driving it last week, and I'm at Kedzie and Fullerton near my home in Logan Square. I'm getting to the intersection, and the thing just shuts down. Dead.
Boo.
Deader.
Boo.
Nothing. And worse yet, smoke starts to pour out from under the hood.
No.
Yeah. And I'm going, oh, that's not good. Something's burning. Yeah. I think it's me. So fortunately, I was able to.
And it wasn't the 70s.
I was able to pull in to the right lane, and my maybe it was the time of day, but my auto club was on top of it. I mean, the tow truck was there in a half an hour, and I was at Pete's Auto in an hour. And then he looks at it, and he said, "Oh." He said, "This isn't one of the things that's supposed to go wrong with these cars." And that's always a bad sign when yeah, because he calls his Toyota guy and he says, "What usually goes wrong with these things?" And he described what happened to mine. He said, "That's not what usually goes wrong." Not a good sign when you get something completely
unique.
Your
car's really decided to break on you.
Yeah. So,
What
he says,
happened?
He says, "I got to look at it." He gets back to me later in the day and he says, "Oh, your harness went out."
Your harness?
The electrical harness. It's shorted, basically. And, wires crossed and fused.
Is that like the...
It is the
thing where everything plugs into?
It carries all the electrical impulses throughout the car. So it's basically the spinal cord of the car.
Of its...
My spinal cord got detached, all right?
Or had a stroke.
Or had something. And it blew out the battery, and it blew out the starter, and... They had to find a harness for it, and this is why I love Pete. He finds one in Indiana sitting on a shelf in some guy's shop that is brand new. It's never been used, and he didn't know what to do with it, so he sold it to me at half price. But the point is, he had to replace all this and put the car back together.
And wiring
and blah, 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 and it cost me a chunk of change.
Yeah.
All right? And now the car. So if you're listening, Charlene and Mart, I'm not blaming you guys. No,
it's
just because this is one of the things that's not supposed to happen with these cars.
And this is the plight of car ownership.
Well, it's a plight. Yeah. But if it were new, I'd just take it back to the shop and my car blew up.
Yeah.
Give me another one.
You'd still have some kind of warranty when you buy a used car. That's a chance to take.
You're stuck.
Mm-hmm.
But, now, and I'm knocking on this console here really hard.
That's a wood piece there,
it's
folks.
Wood.
Real wood.
Wait, this is my head.
No, your head makes a much thicker sound.
That's true. and nothing bad is ever going to happen to this car ever again.
I hope you're right. I think mine's the alternator.
So, Martin Charlene, your car is still alive. Kind of.
It's alive. It's been resurrected.
And
but didn't you just say that the weather maybe have saved your life?
Oh, yes. That was the other thing.
Because that was the element of the story I found
so
most intriguing.
Pete says to me, says, was it raining when you were driving? And I said, yeah, it was kind of misty and rainy. He says, I think that saved you. I said, what do you mean? He says, I think you would have caught on fire.
Well, thank you, cold October rain.
Rainy day. I said, wow. Okay, so the whole thing, you know, the thing
well,
could have been...
Well, it would have overheated and something would have caught, you know?
Who knows? But, it, I mean, something as it was caught and smoked and it... But he was able to fix it and it's back in service.
Yeah, thank God.
And I'm looking and I already got a tweet from My Skinny Garden. She's got a Pete auto.
Yep, I know exactly where that
in
is.
In Forest Park.
That's a neighbor to my burb.
Yeah.
And but my guy, is his name's Mike, and he's Mike out in Melrose Park, and I will be talking to him today or tomorrow. So Mike's and Pete's, good mechanic folk.
There we go. Yep. And Pete's a great guy.
So is Mike. I can actually say I love my mechanic,
and
I don't believe I'm getting screwed every time I use him.
Yep.
Because he shows me exactly what it costs. He showed me exactly the work he did, the elements he took apart in the car. He'll open the hood and be like, okay, we went in here, we did this, and explains the whole thing to me. Even though by the end of it, I have no idea what he's talking about, I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, same thing with Pete. I mean, Pete, he describes his stuff. I go, okay,
uh-huh,
whatever.
Okay.
Just fix it, okay? Just fix it. So my shout out to Pete, and if you're interested, he's at Pulaski and Wilson. And that's, you know, I don't know how much advertising he wants on the air. So getting back to then, first of all, I'm very excited this morning, and I should tell you,
yes.
Representative Jan Schakowsky is going to be here in the second hour, start the second hour, because tomorrow is Food Day. And we talked about Food Day a little bit last week. Ton of stuff going on. You can go to my website, mikenovak.net, and go to this week's show, and there's a link to Food Day, and there's a link to all the different things going on just in this area. I mean, tons and tons of stuff. Maybe I'll go through some of that later on, but we'll talk to Representative Schakowsky because she's on the Food Day committee along with several other reps. And I'm wondering why there aren't more. I mean, but... And the other thing is, and then later on also, I'll get back to Jan in a second, Jan Schakowsky. We've got the folks from Inspiration Kitchens here. Several weeks ago, I went and had lunch at this place that's right around the corner from the Garfield Park Conservatory, and I'll bet a lot of you don't even know it's there. And it's a restaurant, and they do... really good stuff at Inspiration Kitchens. They help the homeless. They help lower-income people. It's a regular restaurant. You go in and you just have fabulous food. But they have classes there, and they teach people how to be in the food service industry. A 13-week job training program. That enables homeless individuals, ex-offenders, other low-income people, and they do it as sustainably as they possibly can, and it's terrific food. And it's right around the corner from, you know, and I've been saying for years that what Garfield Park Conservatory really needs is a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
They got it. It's there now. And you can walk, you know, you just walk down... south to the L tracks, and then you walk east about three quarters of a block,
yeah.
And there it is.
Were you there at all for any of the adoption plant thing that they had going on yesterday?
You know what? I wanted to go to that,
yeah.
And I was too busy.
I forgot
getting my car fixed, and
yeah, my car was
going to the bank,
and I had my son, and yeah, and I forgot all about it. I felt so guilty because I saw some highlights of it on the news.
I know, I did too. I saw it on the news.
Like, why weren't we there?
I needed those plants, but no, I don't, because did I say this on the air last week? I can't remember, but I think I did when I was starting to take my plants in.
Yeah, I think so. It's time.
Yeah. And I've been gradually moving them into the house. And I said, I thought, oh, I've got a few here. I got to get them in. And then I started counting, and I realized I have over 40 plants in my house.
I have five.
I have over 40.
Six.
And I can't keep track of them all.
You have a prettier house than me, then. Yeesh.
Well, you just pile them, you pile them in a corner. It looks like a jungle. It's, yeah. It's kind of cool.
Well, my problem is when I bring them inside or when I eventually get everything settled is the best light comes from this high up shallow dining room window rather. Mm-hmm. And the light beam, like, as you know, crosses the room through the course of the day. Mm-hmm. So do I have to like keep sliding the poor plant like into the sun? Because all I got are tropicals, you know, so they need a lot of sunlight.
No, you just try to give them the best light you can. And in my problem, in addition to my home being dark, it's cold. Mm. And in fact, I'm supposed to be working with Ron Cowgill to kind of fix the draft problem.
Yeah.
He tells me he's got the solution to the draft problem.
I've been staying with my folks while my apartment gets ready, and my dad put in new doors and new windows this past summer. Mm-hmm. And usually we'll watch, you know, TV on a windy night like we had the other night, and you could hear the, you know.
That's not good.
Oh, yeah, and you notice it, and then all of a sudden you got a chill, and, you know, like, darn. It was blowing cats and dogs outside, and we were sitting there, no noise. No draft. It said it was 70 in there, and it was 70 degrees in there. It wasn't set for 70 and teetering between 66 and 68 because of all the drafts coming through mm-hmm. the house. Mm-hmm. It was spectacular.
I wish.
Yeah.
I only wish.
Doors and windows. Doors and windows.
So Inspiration Kitchen folks here, Sarah Batka, Mike Webb, who showed me his garden there. They've got a Master Gardener volunteer, Anna Marie Leon, is going to be here. Director Margaret Haywood will be on the phone, and we'll talk about Inspiration Kitchens. Kim Marson from Sweet Home Organics in our Sustainable Food Fundamentals segment in the second hour. Of course, in this hour, Rick DeMille Weather. And I've got an article I want to talk to him about. There was an independent investigation looking into the claims by skeptics that, you know, doing the global warming numbers are skewed by certain things like heat island effect and other things. And this study found that there's no grounds for the skeptics' concern about global warming. So can they shut up now? Can we just get them to shut up? But no, we won't. That won't happen, I'm sure. But I want to talk to Rick DeMille about that because, you know, he teaches a lot of climate classes around Chicago. That guy, he teaches in five different places in addition to doing weather here and in addition to doing weather on television. So he's a busy boy. So Rick DeMille will be here, and I think we'll talk about that. And like I said, Jan Schakowsky, representative from the 9th District of Illinois, Congresswoman, will be here, I'm assuming. It's funny, I was listening to Dick Kay yesterday, and they had some snafus about who's calling when, and he wasn't sure if anybody was going to show up to be on his show. And that's the thing. You give the Congresswoman your number, and you say, call, and you hope she does. And that should be... if I were Stephanie Miller, she'd call for sure. That's...
Well, you'd be hot.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I've met her. She's a gorgeous lady, so I can see how a lot of people
would if she said, yeah.
Yeah, I want this.
Okay.
She's not diva-like, though. She has the air of divaness to her, yeah. But she's really down to earth and really sweet. She was so nice when we did the Pride Parade with her. I loved her.
So speaking of parades and things like that, I saw Jan Schakowsky speak this past Thursday. There was a Move the Money rally downtown at Chicago Temple, which was on Thursday, and I attended that. A friend of mine was helping put it together. I said, you know, it's about time for me to get down there. And so I did, and then they marched over to the Occupy Chicago people. And Jan spoke very eloquently at the rally. Jesse Jackson spoke, and Representative Danny Davis was there, and a bunch of very good people talking about and Mike Sanders was talking about it on his program this morning, Move the Money. And it's interesting that banks are now getting to the point where, and you've probably seen some of the YouTube video where some folks have gotten in trouble going into a bank and the banks won't let them move their money. And now some of them, I can understand why the banks get nervous when you walk in with a big sign. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got to be really careful about how you do that. But you know, don't tell me I can't move my money. It's
exactly.
my money.
Exactly. That's kind of like, that's kind of what the whole thing's about. Like, this is our money and you guys have
and
been.
And I just want, I just hope this thing gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
I do too. I do too.
I mean, I go to a credit union, go to a neighborhood bank. I bank at a neighborhood bank, have for 10 years now, a little longer than that. And in the old days, the reason you banked at a big bank was convenience. And they, oh, we've got ATMs all over the place. And then they started charging for those ATMs mm-hmm. that are all over the place. And now they're going to charge for your debit card. And mm-hmm. now, you know, and if that gets beaten down, that whole debit card thing, they'll figure out how to charge you for something else.
The audacity of the debit card thing just kills me, because that's a result of the new federal guidelines going in and making the rules fairer for consumers versus credit cards and big banks and companies. Mm-hmm. Because they found out in that whole investigation, the cost to swipe a debit card, the bank was actually charging something like 400 times what it actually costs to reap those profits. And they're like, you can't do that. And the government went in and capped it. And now they're like, well, now we'll charge you $5 a month to use your debit card, because we got to make that money somewhere, because we're a bunch of greedy. Do you have a beep button?
No, I don't.
Okay, then I won't.
I don't have one of those things there. I could just shut off your mic.
There'd be a lot of beeping, okay. So I'm not going to continue.
Just say bleep.
Bleep.
Yeah.
There are a lot of bleeping bleeps. Greedy bleeping bleeps. Okay, I'm done. But yeah, so, and then a lot of people are just like, oh, well, it's not that big a deal. And then there are other people who are, you know, completely shocked and stunned by it. And there are other people who don't understand why they're doing it. They just think, like, no, there's a whole pattern of behavior here. They're a bunch of greedy bleeps.
Yep. Mm. Something like that.
Can we talk about flowers or something pretty?
Yeah.
Yay.
Okay. Well, one of the things I did yesterday in the attempt to make, and by the way, give us a call, 773-838-9278. We got a little time here before we get to Rick DeMaio, and we'll handle a few things. I had a guy, let me get back to this, because I'm getting highly distractible here.
Not you.
Yeah, I know. Went to Pesci's Garden Center.
Yay.
Very pretty. Oh. You'd have liked it. It's a beautiful day. Talked to Wally, Dr. Wally over there, and got some mums for my containers, and mainly got some Back to Nature compost for our garden bed in the community garden to put it to bed. And I want to thank Chris Pesci, who's been a good supporter of the Green on McLean Community Garden this year.
And this show.
And this show, yeah.
Very much
absolutely.
So.
And,
I like to hug Chris when I see him. Just hug him.
He's a huggable guy.
You're a huggable good guy. Yeah.
He likes that, too.
Everybody likes being hugged.
So I would say, folks, if you're you know, need a place to go today, still spruce up your containers, go to Pesci's. It's going to be a beautiful day. What a nice day to sort of browse and see what they've got. They got lots of stuff in stock. And I want to thank Chris and Wally because they have really stepped up to support the Green on McLean Community Garden. And other people have as well, including the Care of Trees and Lake Street Landscape Supply. And so this afternoon we're tearing stuff down there, pulling out some veggies. I'm going to leave a few things up. The Brussels sprouts, I leave them because we still haven't had a frost in the city. I know a lot of you have had frost, but not in the city, or at least not in this part of the city, not Logan Square. And the Brussels sprouts are actually a little better. They're sweeter when you get them a little frosty. And I understand kale's the same way. So there's a reason, and you know, and both of them are hardy enough they can withstand that. However, tomatoes, yeah, they're about done. So we're probably going to wrap up what's left of the tomatoes. And what we've been doing is taking the tomatoes home, put them in a paper bag with an apple. And you know, apple gives off ethylene gas, and it ripens the tomatoes. And believe it or not, even if they were ripened. Or if they haven't been quite ripened, if they're still green, they'll ripen and still taste great. So that we've been doing a lot of that with the end of year tomatoes, putting them in that paper bag. So we're gonna do that. So it's a busy day for Mr. Novak here to go out to the community garden after the radio show and so forth, and Maybe I'll even try to squeeze some Chicago Bears in there someplace. But
what? Bears?
I'm not sure what this was.
That was a listener who just had a bank horror story about how they're, you know, playing the shell game to recoup.
Well,
that
why didn't he or she want to be on the air?
Well, I thought we were going to talk about flowers. I didn't know if you wanted to go back to banks.
I could have done that.
But apparently his bank, though, is now charging $28 a day if you're in overdraft.
$28 a day?
A day. So, like, he, you know, forgot about his automatic withdrawal to renew his, like, you know, SunTimes subscription or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it took it out. And then, you know, it was a day. And then he didn't realize it for, like, 3 or 4 days. And by the time he found out about it, they hit him with $160
Whoa.
In fees. Yeah. Again, to, you know, same, different bank, same idea.
I gotta tell you, I live in mortal fear of missing a credit card payment.
No kidding, right?
I mean, it's like my life runs around that. And the idea that I might miss the credit card.
Yeah.
And I know some people you can have an automatic withdrawal to do that, I assume.
Mm-hmm. You can set it all up. You can do it all online. You can not even think about it. As long as you have the X amount of dollars in there, you can do it mindlessly.
That's the problem.
And that's what they want you to do.
Who's got all that money in there that's there all the time?
And they don't want you to pay attention. And they just want to be able to go in and take it and do whatever they want, have it all on their little grid and da-da-da-da-da. I mean, I still pay for most of my bills with paper checks just because I like the idea that that check has to go there. It has to be processed. You know, I'd like to think that maybe one person is keeping their job because I refuse to commit to online banking completely. I don't know. I could be just delirious.
Delusional.
Probably. Someone's got a machine somewhere. But I buy a stamp. I put it in an envelope. A letter carrier has to take it there. I mean, I'm old school.
Wow, you are total old school.
I am old school.
One of the things I did this week is put some stories that, you know, I read a lot of stuff during the week that comes in, and I don't get to talk about all of them. I put a number of these stories on the website, MikeNovak.net, this week's show, and I have that urban heat island climate change story that I talked about a little earlier. Another one is about the composting bill that got passed in Illinois a couple of years ago and how it's doing. One of the things that the story points out is that 34 million tons of food waste are generated in the U.S. each year, according to the EPA. And less than 3% of that is recovered and recycled, at least in 2009. Those were the figures. So that's part of the reason Illinois the General Assembly passed a bill that legalized commercial food scrap composting. Since passing the bill, less than 10% of the restaurant and grocery store market has begun to compost food scraps. But we knew this when, you know, we talked about it. I said it's going to take a while for it to get out on its feet. But so far, that's under 10% in Illinois. And part of the reason is that composting is an estimated 33% more costly than landfill use. When you say that 33%, you're not measuring the cost down the road. We never do that. We never do that. There is a cost to putting things in landfills, even though it's cheaper now. What's the cost 30 years from now of doing that? But at any rate, it's an interesting story. Also, the story I put, Grist had a really cool story, which is, and if you don't know Grist, you should go to grist.org.
I have become a fan of them on Facebook, and I love it because they update frequently so you can see the different stories that they're talking about.
You know what? Would you make me a fan of Grist on my Facebook page?
Sure, I will.
By the way, you should know, you can always write to us on Facebook or Twitter.
And we're 3 likes away from 400 on our Mike Novak Show show page on Facebook. So help us out, won't you? Get us above 400. Let's see if we can do it before show's over.
That's right, because it's a competition with Mighty House.
Everything's a competition.
With me.
He said it.
All right. Yeah, that's true. Grist did this story about how we're going to have 10 billion people on the planet by the end of the century. And they say it can be done. It's possible to feed them, but some things are going to need to change. And they interview Jonathan Foley, who's a lead author and study of a study they did about this, and director of University of Minnesota's Institute on the Environment. And he was a member of the Nature Conservancy Science Council Advisory Board. And he talks about how this might be done. It's a very, very fascinating story. And one of the things he says is something that I've become attuned to. I talked about a few weeks ago. It's just if we got to eat less meat because there's so much of our land that's devoted to the feed that goes to especially, you know, red meat. We ate more chicken. That would be a better thing. And the cow eat more chicken. It's like those commercials.
Well, my family's taken to, instead of traditional meatloaf, turkey meatloaf. Still absolutely delicious, way healthier for you.
Yeah.
So we've been doing that more and more, turkey burgers and turkey meatloaf, and, you know, using the ground turkey and substituting it for the ground beef.
And he points out that there's a couple of things. It's like we got to stop trying to cut down the rainforest and farm there because the yields there are not really that good.
No, they're designed for the indigenous plants that are there, not necessarily
right.
A traditional farm.
And he says also organic farming is not necessarily the answer, but it's part of the answer, and that's the deal. So that's a fascinating article. You might want to go to that. Let's go to line one and talk to Chris in Palatine. How you doing this morning, Chris?
Oh, marvelous. Beautiful day.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, no doubt about it.
I would recommend highly to you that you take a little field trip some Saturday.
Okay.
Up to Madison, Wisconsin.
All right.
They have the greatest farmers market in the world there.
Well, is that quantifiable, that it's the greatest farmers market in the world?
Julia Child considered it one of the best farmers markets in the country.
Cool.
And
how often do you get up there?
Not as often as I like to, but I was up there last weekend, and you know, if you're familiar with Madison, it's around the Capitol Square.
Uh-huh.
And they have vendors up there, you know, basically around the entire square. And they have a website, of course. I don't know the name of it offhand, but if you were to go, I think it's Dane County Farmers Market is what it's officially called.
We'll see if we can track that down.
But they have a great, you know, I think that Wisconsin, this area around Madison, probably has the highest concentration of organic farmers everywhere. Anywhere, because you know you can buy the greatest bakery in the world. In fact, you could live very comfortably just eating there, except for only two examples. They don't have any booze, unfortunately, so no beer or wine.
Well, Heather won't be there.
Okay, and they don't have any dairy. I mean, dairy from the standpoint of milk or butter. They have cheese, of course. You know, any variety of cheese you could ever think of is there. You know, they have organic meats. They have, you know, basically everything, and they have fantastic produce. They have the heritage apples there, they have heritage tomatoes. I mean, it's just a great place.
Heather tracked it down.
Is it the Dane County Farmers Market on the square?
That's it.
I found it.
And you will see when you look there, you can also see the profiles of the different vendors that they have, the different farmers that they have. They all have little, you know, profiles in there, and you'll see that there's a huge number of them, as I said, are organic farmers, and it is really a very much very worthwhile drive. And
now, is it open year round, or do they close it down for the winter?
No, the last outdoor fair, I believe, is the
through November 5th.
Yeah, November 5th, right.
Okay.
And then they have an indoor farmers market.
You know, which they do in Chicago as well.
Yeah, that goes on, you know, throughout the year. And in the spring, it's great because you can get all kinds of plants up there.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, in the best time, of course, is in the summer to, you know, early fall when you can get, you know, basically great produce and you know, also helping out farmers, which is also very important.
And I'm glad you brought that up because I would love to get up there and see it. One of the other articles I was mentioning, some things I had put up on my website that caught my attention. And there's an article on the Local Beat, which is a website dedicated to food in Chicago. And Rob Gardner, who's been on the program, I'm going to have him on again soon. Talks about as the farmers markets are closing down here in Chicago, where can you go to get local food and fresh food, and he gives you some tips on that, and that's also at MikeNovak.net this week's show, and he lists some of the markets in the area that supply local food and has some pretty good advice. So I would encourage people to do that as well. And again, also, Chris, you reminded me that Faith in Place does the winter farmers markets. They do them at a lot of churches throughout the Chicago area, and they're going to begin that in the first of November, the first week in November, and I'm going to have them on the show then to talk about that. So,
well, you know, you were mentioning about apples, and in regards to tomatoes,
but, right?
You know, store bought. I mean, I hate buying an apple from a store because you know they just have zero flavor. And one of the great things about, again, the farmers markets, at least, again, the particular one in Madison, is, you know, they'll have orchards up there with varieties of apples you've never heard of.
Oh, yeah, and that's one of the great crimes of industrialization and mass production is that we have narrowed the list of apples that are available to, you know, a dozen.
Three or four.
Yeah, really. When there are hundreds of fabulous varieties, they just don't get grown that much anymore because they're, well, the ones we grow, we grow so they can be shipped well. And
the
that's,
ones we grow, that they can last for 2 years.
Right, exactly. They can, you know, right. It's like they're already in the can. And they can withstand a nuclear attack.
Yes, absolutely. And they have absolutely zero flavor. And I heard a news report one time on NPR talking about tomatoes. And they said somebody was driving a truckload of tomatoes, and a tomato hit the ground, you know, fell out, hit the ground, and didn't even have a damage on it.
Well, I thought you were going to say cracked the concrete, but but that's possible.
That day's coming, sad
but
true.
Pretty soon.
That might be what it takes.
Yeah, because, you know, apparently these tomatoes are, you know, in their packaging, they're having an impact of like 30 or 40 miles an hour.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah, but as I said, I really recommend going up there. I think you would be very impressed with it. They get the greatest bakery in the world. I mean, you can, whatever you want. They have I picked up an apple pie from an Amish baker up there. And, you know, unfortunately, I gained weight. The good news is, though, it's a mile around the square. So walking around the square, you get plenty of exercise. And it is incredible. And a nice day, they'll have tens of thousands of people up there.
Fabulous. Chris, thank you so much for the tip. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
You have a good Sunday. Speaking of tips, here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Did you know that according to realtors, trees can account for as much as 10% of a property's value? In this housing market, you need to consider all of your assets, and especially your trees. So take care of them and consider having a certified arborist evaluate the trees before you sell your home or before you buy one. A good inspection involves assessing the trees from top to bottom, analyzing everything that could affect their health, and determining whether they pose a threat to property and safety. And arborists from the Care of Trees will look for disease and harmful insects, will gauge the health and structural integrity of the trees, and will then present a written report noting any problems and recommending corrective measures. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
Make this your best gardening season yet. Hi, I'm Melinda Myers, horticulturist and gardening expert. Invest a bit of time now to ensure a bountiful harvest and beautiful landscape throughout the season. And include Milorganite, eco-friendly all-purpose fertilizer, as part of your formula for success. Use Milorganite organic nitrogen fertilizer in all your planting beds. The low nitrogen, slow release formula makes Milorganite goof-proof and good for the environment. So choose Milorganite for better results naturally. Available wherever garden supplies are sold.
Are you kidding me? I just received my November-December issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Oh, no. I know she's crying. You'll get your magazine soon.
Promise.
I promise.
Okay.
Now, aren't we supposed to get a 2-minute warning before we get to the end of the gardening season?
I would hope so, but Mother Nature's tend to not been kind with that.
But wait, it's not the end of the gardening season.
What?
Gardening season is never over. How do I know? One reason is that you can grow microgreens under grow lights all year long. How crazy is that? Okay, not very crazy. What's crazy is trying to create a green facility on the site of an illegal landfill. welcome to the Chicago Center for Green Technology, which I've talked about in this show many times. On what used to be a brownfield, there is now a 17-acre native plant garden, not to mention a platinum LEED certified building. If you want to grow beautiful flowers indoors during the winter, you might consider one of the many kinds of amaryllis plants that can grace your house during the holidays. And, of course, all this is in the latest Chicagoland Gardening magazine. And then there's my column on the inside back page featuring parodies of holiday carols, enough to make you want to give up the holidays altogether.
You'll freeze your robin.
I will what?
Freeze your robin.
I might freeze my robin. Anyway, pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over Chicago, but it's a lot easier if you subscribe. Call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600, or go to chicagolandgardening.com.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
It's jungle out there. Disorder and confusion everywhere. No one seems to care. Well, I do. Hey, who's in charge? It's jungle out there. Poison in the very air we breathe. You know what's in the water that you drink? Well, I do. And it's amazing. People think I'm crazy, 'cause I worry all the time. If you paid attention, you'd be worried too.
This is kind of my theme song.
You better pay attention. All this world we love so much might just kill you.
I could be wrong now.
I could be wrong now.
But I don't think so.
But I don't think so. 'Cause there's a jungle out there. There's a jungle out there.
And one guy who knows what a jungle it is out there is Rick DeMaio. How you doing, Rick?
Oh, Mike, I don't know. After further review, can we push the Michigan State Spartan on the one-yard line instead of over the plane of the end zone there?
You know what? I got to tell you, I fell asleep. I missed the end of the game. And it, right. It sounds like you guys didn't do so well.
Well, I'll put it this way. With 2 seconds left, Michigan State has the ball at the 44-yard line. The guy throws it up, bounces off of Michigan State's receiver's helmet in the end zone, bounces back towards the field to the 1 yard line. Michigan State player who was facing the other way caught the ball, and the Wisconsin defenders trying to pull him back onto the field fell. The refs actually called it down at the 1 yard line, but as I mentioned, after further review, the play in the field was reversed, and Michigan State beats Wisconsin 37-31. There's your Sunday morning college football.
College football report, and hey, listen.
Well, you were talking about Madison, so I figured I might as well talk about it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, actually, but I couldn't remember what had happened to the game. It was a long day yesterday.
Yeah, but I know you're more of a Michigan fan.
Well, and we lost to Michigan State, too, so there you have it.
Yeah, Michigan State's got a pretty good team. So
they do.
At least the football, you know, there's a little bit more parity along the side.
Your phone line's breaking up a little bit. I wonder if we should redial.
No. You know what it is? I'm at the back of my apartment. I'll just walk to the front.
Oh, okay. That sounds good.
Perfectly fine.
Now, the back being the part that's away from the lake.
No. The back of my apartment is on the west side.
Okay.
Yeah, the east side of my apartment is facing the lake, so now it's much better, I would imagine.
It is.
Yeah, good signal
now.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't know if you heard earlier, I was talking about that study about climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had a chance to look at that?
Yeah, I looked at it, and you know what, Mike? It's amazing because there was also an article in New York Times about a week ago, and it basically said, whatever happened to global warming, which I thought was really interesting. And I predicted this even after this past summer. We had, one of the warmest summers ever, one of the worst droughts in the state of Texas, Kansas, and Oklahoma. But yet I think everybody feels a little bit scared to come out and use that term, which I think in some way is good because I never liked the term global warming. But at the same time, it shows you how the political winds have changed a little bit. And, you know, a recent study was done as well when they asked Republicans, do you believe in global warming? And about 86% of them said no, and about 86% of the Democrats said yes. And then they said, do you believe in climate change? And about 60% of the Republicans said no, which meant 40% said yes. Mm-hmm. And about 98% of the Democrats said yes. So I think it's all how you phrase it. And the thing about it is, I think what happened in the early 2000s, everybody kind of jumped on the bandwagon and didn't really explain that even though global warming is a long-term pattern, you can still have snow, you can still have cold. So when you're handing out leaflets on the corner of Michigan Avenue and Balbo on a cold winter day promoting changes to help us have a, you know, a better environment, you got to make sure that you do it in the right frame of mind. So I think that's where the debate has kind of shifted a little bit. And, you know, it's amazing, Mike. I think about how much, not so much advocating, but trying to educate the public on science that hasn't happened yet. You know, from a political standpoint, it's almost the same way. It's trying to get people to understand that this is the better way to think about it. And if it doesn't happen in the next 3 to 4 months, then you've pretty much shot yourself in the foot. I mean, think about the rise and fall of Michelle Bachmann. Think about the rise and fall of Rick Perry. And now think about the current rise of, you know, Herman Cain, and who knows when he's going to fall. And think about the rise and fall, as I predicted, the Tea Party. Right now, the Tea Party in the Republican Congress has an all-time low approval rating because I think they try to do too much too fast. And in this day and age of 24/7 media coverage with newspapers becoming internet blogs and news channels at night now becoming 24 hours, 7 days a week cable stations. If you don't get something done in 6 days that you said you're going to get done in a week, you're a failure. And I think that's what's happening with the whole climate change discussion. In this particular article that came out in The Guardian is about the skeptics and how to get people to rethink how they're going to actually talk about this in a, I hate to say it, it's kind of a funny way of saying it, how are you going to talk about climate change in a sustainable way? In other words, how are you going to be able to sustain the argument and to sustain the discussion that people could still do something in a positive way about it?
Wow. Okay. We'll be grading the papers on this at the end of the hour. Well, one of the things that's really interesting I've clicked on. That article that you're referring to is on my website on this week's show. And if you go there, there's a graphic of the temperature starting in 1805 or something,
mm-hmm. right?
And going to the present, and you can watch how the Earth warms up,
right?
And over that time, one of the things they did is compiled more than a billion temperature records dating back to the 1800s from 15 sources around the world, and they found that the average global land temperature has risen by about 1 degree centigrade since the mid-1950s.
Right, which is about a degree and a half there.
Yeah, and but you're right about how it becomes a matter of global warming. The phrase global warming doesn't work because, as you said, yeah, you can still have snow, you can
right.
still have cold, you can still have rain. But when you say climate variability, which is what you like to
right.
use, you can see that there seems to be more climate variability.
And you know what? It was interesting because last week when I was teaching my students in my climate change class about this particular article in New York Times, it was also another one stating that in the month of, I think it's going to be the first week of November, they expect the 7th billionth person to be born, not to be born, but the 7th billionth person to be living currently in the world to be born in northern India. So our population will become 7 billion in early November 2011. And they're still looking for about 9 point, the prediction from the World Food Bank and also the UN is predicting to have a population of 9.2 billion by 2050. And it goes on to talk about, as you had mentioned before, about the ability to grow food and the ability to spread these resources to different parts of the world that, that needs it. And part of the thing that I talk about is the increased vehicle registration across China, which is enormous, the increased demand for energy in that country as well as in India, and also the decreased food supply. And also, which is, I think, interesting, Mike, we've talked about this before, is really the collapse of the entire ethanol market from a standpoint of trying to make corn into ethanol-based products that, that provide, you know, fuel for cars. It doesn't really look like it's going to do as much as we thought. And you know what? Sometimes you, you try to do something and you invest energy, not energy, but you invest efforts into it, and you realize that, you know what? We probably tilted the food scale a little bit towards one side, and we ended up growing too much corn for that. And if you remember, corn prices and world food prices just skyrocketed 2 or 3 years ago. And I think now there's a balance of going back the other way. But that doesn't mean that you stop trying.
But there are other kinds of biodiesel.
Oh yeah,
and biofuels.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. So I think as long as, and what I liked about this article that you post on your website from The Guardian, what it does is it continues the debate, and it just doesn't say that it's not happening. You need to stop talking about it. And that's what I talked before, in that when I gave that long-winded discussion about things, I try to get my students to critically think about this and not just advocate. Here's the hockey stick, temperaturized, therefore this is going to happen, therefore it's the end of the world. Because when it doesn't happen, they go away, well, you told me it was.
And one of our listeners, Zan, just tweeted something that really makes a lot of sense. She says, please stop asking, do you believe in climate change?
Right.
And ask instead, do you accept the facts about climate change?
Right.
It's not a belief system. It's a scientific discipline.
That's exactly right, and that's a great tweet, because I don't know where we started to get into the thing of like, well, but do you really believe it's happened? It's like, well, who says we have to believe or be somewhat skeptical about it when it's obviously there? But I think what has happened, what was occurring probably after Al Gore's movie, Inconvenient Truth, was a lot of people found some things that were, you know, not completely right with it. And I think part of it was, you know, Gore was licking his wounds from not winning the presidency, you know, back in 2000. And he was basically coming out and saying, you know what, if this would have happened, this would have happened, I would have been able to do this. And I think that was part of it. I think we can all kind of see through some of that smoke and mirrors, so to say. But is he still the lightning rod that many people have kind of, you know, coattailed on, so to say, to do other things? Absolutely. So, you know, you can't be a leader and not be shouted down every once in a while. But I always say, don't shout back, but talk in an educational way.
Yeah, exactly. Try to get to the side. I love, like you say, you can ask people, do you believe in it? Well, you know, I believe in the Great Pumpkin. Now let's prove it exists.
Well, you know what? I always try to tell my students, I go, you know what? Next time you see someone standing on a corner handing out leaflets for Greenpeace or Sierra Club, or I've seen some lately where people are trying to get you to give money to them to help, you know, orphans around the world, don't just pass them by and say, I can't talk right now. Spend 5 minutes. Just talk to them. Ask them questions about what they're doing, what they believe in, and then come back with something that helps promote the subject in a positive way. But, you know, I've done that before. You stand on street corners to try to get some sort of conversation going back and forth. And it becomes a little bit discouraging after a while when people have absolutely no time to talk about something that's important. So that's also one of the things I get a little bit upset.
Well, we got to get to the forecast
Sure.
here, but I remember 3 years ago when you and I went to see Al Gore speak at mm-hmm. the Chicago Theater, and it was a lesson to me, because there was some guy handing out literature,
right.
And you stopped and you engaged him, and he didn't have his facts down,
yeah.
And you took him to the cleaners, and it was really fun to watch.
Yeah, well, you know, I tend not to stop talking sometimes. But,
but that was, I wish I had a video of that, and so invite me to go out with you again sometime. I'm going to bring my video camera and just wait for you to engage somebody who's doing something like that.
Yeah, and if my mother was there, she's like, there's Ricky, never knowing when to shut his mouth, right?
Well, what's going on?
Mike, this is interesting, and I know we only have a couple of minutes here, but is it me, or do you feel like we're having like a second fall foliage season?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I feel like we're having a you know, warm spell, and I love the fact days are great.
Yeah, well, we do. But, you know, all the leaves that were changing on the trees last week have basically blown into Michigan, okay? But we still have a lot of greenery out there. So it's almost my feeling that we had an early fall foliage season, and it looks like we're going to have a second one over the next couple of days. So bottom line, the last minute that we have here, we had a gorgeous day yesterday, sunny skies. We had 66, normal high is 60. We'll probably get back into the mid-60s today with some clouds, maybe a late-day sprinkle, but no big deal. And then listen to this, mid-60s tomorrow and low to mid-70s possible during the day on Tuesday before things really begin to cool down and cloud up and get a little wet around here on Wednesday. But I don't think we're going to see a lot of rain out of this. We generally stay on the cool side of this next storm system for Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. But if you can get out and enjoy the second, what I call the second half of the fall foliage season today, tomorrow, and Tuesday, we got great weather the next 3 days.
I guess I
got
to ask you, any clue as to what Halloween's going to be like?
not yet, but from what I can see, it looks like we're going to be on the cool side. But I did send you some information relating to the upcoming winter outlook. You can look at that, and we'll talk about that next week.
Oh, sounds good, because everybody in the world is saying, because there was this article, I guess, that came out the other week, and, winter's going to be awful. Oh, my goodness, you know, batten down the hatches.
You know, it was funny because AccuWeather put out this forecast of 50 to 55 inches, and I said, you know how much snow we had last year? People go, no. I go, we got about 55 inches. They go, well, that's the same. I'm like, yeah. See, what you're doing is you're reacting to something that you're basing your fear on nothing. And it seems that that's the way things are in this world this day and age. I don't think people actually sit down and listen to news. They scan it on their iPod or their iPad, and next thing you know, all they're really looking at is big black font of 24 size squeezed down to 6, and they read 2 lines, and they think that's the news story. And I don't know how that's going to ever change, but that's the culture we're in right now.
I guess it is. Well, we will discuss that next week, talk about your prognostication.
Yeah, I gave
one
as well. I sent you something in that I do for my snowplow guys, and you can read that. We'll talk about that next week.
We'll do. That's Rick DeMaio. You can go to DeMaioWeather.com. You got any TV appearances coming up?
No, I'm not on TV for a while, but I have too much schoolwork to do, so that's good that I'm not on.
Grade those papers.
Yeah, without a doubt.
All right, I'll talk to you soon.
See you, Mike.
Take care. I take it that was that from...
that was the Congresswoman.
The Congresswoman,
yes,
herself, just called?
She will be calling us back in about 7 minutes because I told her we're about to break for news.
Okay, awesome. Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky is going to be with us in the second half of the show. We're going to talk about Inspiration Cafe as well, Inspiration Kitchens, and Sweet Home Organics, all on the Mike Novak Show. And I guess I'll play something for you coming out of the hour.
Mm-hmm.
Because we actually had a request from Heather Fry. So stick around to hear me talk to Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky in the second hour. We'll see you then.
I was robbed. I spent the whole night waiting with a great pumpkin when I could have been out for tricks or treats. Halloween is over and I missed it. You blockhead. You kept me up all night waiting for the great pumpkin. And all that came was a beagle. I didn't get a chance to go out for tricks or treats. And it was all your fault. Also, what a fool I was. I could have had candy, apples, and gum. And cookies and money and all sorts of things. But no, I had to listen to you. You blockhead. What a fool I was. Trick or treats come only once a year. And I miss it by sitting in a pumpkin patch with a blockhead. You owe me restitution!
You heard about fury in a woman scorned, haven't you?
Yes, I guess I have.
Well, that's nothing compared to the fury of a woman who has been cheated out of tricks or treats.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Well, we have guests in the studio, and we may, we might have had a little snafu here. Pull that mic around that you're sitting right there. In studio right now, I have Sarah Batka and Mike Webb from Inspiration Kitchens. And you had some other folks that were going to join us, and where did they go?
Apparently, they went to your home.
Oh, no. Oh, dear. Well, I don't broadcast out of my home.
It'd be so much more convenient if you could with that whole getting up in the morning process.
I would like that.
Can we
get a microphone there in the basement? And
a mic aboard an FTP line, we could probably do anything we wanted.
Oh, boy. Or ISDN.
Yeah, whatever.
Let's do that. And, Well, we're going to hear from Congresswoman Schakowsky in just a couple minutes. But before we do, I just want to say hi to Sarah Batka and Mike Webb. Are we going to be able to track down our other guests, do you think, Sarah?
Yeah, we can get them on the phone.
Did they stop in my neighborhood? Tell you what, if they want to help pull out some of the vegetables in the community garden while they're there, because we're having a work day this afternoon.
Oh, wonderful.
Just have them stick around and we'll do something. And Mike knows all about that because you're one of the things you do at Inspiration Kitchens is take care of the garden there.
Oh, yeah. I'm the case manager / gardener / whatever else needs to be done.
Uh-huh. And I saw your garden. I've got a picture on the website taken there in the well, actually, we don't have the vegetables there. I wonder if did Kathleen put anything on the homepage of that? I wonder.
Well, Kathleen might be at home making coffee for people right now, so
that's
she
right.
might be a little busy.
What's this? Okay, I'm trying to see if we had. No, we didn't have any of those pictures, but I've got some pictures of your lovely garden, and we will talk about that a little later on, as well as the entire operation, the restaurant. At Inspiration Kitchens, which you guys should be very proud of because it's a very good organization and the food is excellent.
Thank you.
You know, and we will talk about that later. But first, we're going to go to the phones and bring in Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I am great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, Mike, it's such an honor to have you on the show. I know, you know, at Chicago's Progressive Talk, you're one of Stephanie Miller's favorites.
Love her.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people do. And I know, you know, you chat with Decay every now and then.
I do.
And I'm just so excited to have you on my own program. And I know you're a very busy person jetting around today. And I saw you speak at the rally on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Give me your impression of that.
Well, I am so excited about people getting off their couch and out of their despair and really suffering. There's a lot of suffering out there now, and fighting back and saying, no, this is not the country that I want. This is not the America that says 99% of the people don't get the benefits that the top 1% are taking. And I just think it's a very positive thing. You know, we walked down to the Occupy Chicago area, and I don't know what happened last night. If they, you know, but
you know, that was. Can you check that, Heather? Because it's one of the things I don't. They were supposed to have a big crowd yesterday, and I haven't actually seen the news on what happened with Occupy Chicago.
After 11 o'clock, when the park closed, I don't know if there were arrests, but. But here's the thing. I think that this very notion that we are the 99% and the disparity in income in this country, and, you know, you've been talking about food, and I think this is one of the places that in the United States of America that one out of four children would be what we call food insecure, sometimes going to bed hungry, is just totally unacceptable.
Yes, it is, and we're looking at a headline here, 130 arrests at Occupy Chicago last night, 11 arrests in Cincinnati. So the city of Chicago continues, I guess, to enforce their curfew in Grant Park.
Yeah.
But you make a point about the food insecurity, and of course, the reason I have you on the show today. And by the way, kudos to you, because on Thursday you went. Information here. Chicago police said Sunday morning that 130 arrests had been made. None of the arrests had resisted. Everybody was very peaceful and smiling, and there was no violence, though a lot of chanting.
Right.
So that's and that's part of their MO. It's don't resist, be nonviolent, and which is
that's why when some of my colleagues talk about a mob, and there were those who said they thought there might be violence in Chicago, absolutely far from it. This is about sending a very clear message of resistance to what's been happening in our country at the hands, really, of the Republicans.
And my kudos to you, because you marched over to Occupy Chicago on Thursday, and you hung around for a while. I think I left before you did.
Yeah, I just wanted to see what was going on and watch their process of how they make decisions, which is very interesting and very democratic. And the chant is, this is what democracy looks like, or show me what democracy looks like, this is what democracy looks like. And so I think it's a very positive thing. We'll see how this turns out. But in any case, what I have been seeing up until now is people depressed and in despair when they go into foreclosure. We co-sponsor these for foreclosure workshops. And, people with their heads down, the last thing they want to hear from is a politician speaking, and I get that, because they want some help. This is the American dream slipping through their fingers. And that's the same thing I feel with this whole issue of hunger and food insecurity and food deserts. And, that's why I'm also going to do the food stamp challenge, or it's really SNAP. The SNAP program now is what it's called. But I'm doing the food stamp challenge. I'm going to live on food stamp budget for a week starting on Thursday.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. This is the second time I've done it. It's $4.50 a day.
$4.50 a day, and you're going to live on that for a week.
Yeah,
And you've done it before. What did you find out?
What I found out is that it's very hard to buy fresh fruits and vegetables. I'm going to try and do it smarter this time, and start in the produce section and see what kind of bargains I might be able to find. Because by the time I was done shopping, I could afford like one tomato for the week or something. And so I'm going to try and be as smart as I can, but. I really appreciate now what people, particularly if you've got kids hanging on you when you go shopping, who want things and the impossibility, even strawberries or something, that you just can't afford to buy them. It's not easy. It's possible, but it's very difficult.
Well, yeah, it is. It's a tough thing. And what I would ask people who are listening to the show right now, before we finish the conversation with Representative Jan Schakowsky, tweet in or Facebook and give us suggestions that I can pass along to her on how to buy food with her food stamp for a week. And still get something that is good and nutritious and cheap, I guess. It's putting that all together is a very difficult task.
It's time consuming, and it assumes that you've got a place to store food, that you've got pots and pans to cook in, and the time to cook in. So it's really a challenge for a lot of people to eat well on such a small budget.
A quick tweet already. I hope she likes ramen noodles.
Well, it's very high in sodium. I have high blood pressure, and so I'm not going to do that. I did that the last time, and I don't want to do it again. So, any suggestions of things that I might be able to buy and cook, or even ready-made foods that aren't so high in sodium.
And, of course, tomorrow is Food Day, and you're on the advisory panel for that.
I am. We want to call attention to the importance of healthy food, the danger of hunger. And for me, this takes a lot of different aspects school lunches. We want to make sure that they're healthier. I've been part of the Healthy Schools campaign in Chicago to promote healthy school meals. And, you know, just to work, because I think that the government does have a role. We don't want advertising to kids of unhealthy foods, and we certainly don't want to see a cut in the SNAP program, the food stamp program. But unfortunately, the Republicans did vote to cut $504 million from the Women, Infant, and Children Nutrition Program, which is just unbelievable. That is literally taking food out of the mouths of hungry children. Now, I'm hoping that it's not going to finally go through in the final budget, but even the notion of making those kinds of cuts. And the other thing is, I received about 40 paper plates with messages on it from constituents of mine. It says, from Jack, this is a guy who says, I've worked all my life as a taxi cab driver. When I retired, it was with empty pockets. I now live in subsidized housing and depend on soup kitchens and food pantries for food. And, you know, a mom that says, what would happen if the food benefits were cut? I have no food in my home. And, you know, so these programs are so critical that, you know, even the notion of cutting the modest benefits that they are now is just unthinkable.
And we're talking to Representative Jan Schakowsky about Food Day. Are you going to be participating in any of the activities tomorrow?
Well, I'm going to be, you know, going back to Washington. I hope to do some more media to promote Food Day, so that we're going to be able to continue to get the word out. And I am looking forward to, you know, being a spokesperson for this day.
Of course, on Tuesday, Mayor Rahm Emanuel is having his what they're calling a food summit with Michelle Obama and CEOs of various companies, reportedly Walgreens, Walmart, and as you know, that's somewhat controversial in itself, and the idea that they might help alleviate problems in food deserts, it's not without controversy. Have you had
for good reason, because you know people who work at Walmart often end up on food stamps themselves. You know, it would be great if the company would just pay people a sufficient wage so that they don't have to turn to the government for Medicaid and for other kind of help.
And of course, you saw the other day they announced that they're cutting back on health insurance for a lot of their employees,
which is pretty modest, I think, to begin with.
Yeah.
But you know, listen. Whatever we can get, I suppose we need to be grateful for, or we need to applaud them for. But really, you know, in this race to the bottom, when it comes to wages, Walmart has been a leader around the world in doing just that. So.
Which is why on this show, of course, I'm encouraging local food and people growing their own. Advocates for Urban Agriculture is a group that wants to get involved in the Mayor's Summit, and there are a lot of local programs, you know, Growing Power, Growing Home, Angelic Organics, and on and on and on. And these are people with boots on the ground who are showing, you know, one of the tweets I got about you going on the food stamp, it said, well, the best thing you can do is grow your own.
And well, I'm not going to be able to do it by Thursday, but I don't disagree with that at all, and I certainly do love our farmers markets, et cetera, many of which, by the way, do take the SNAP program, the food stamp program. And let me just also announce that I'm going to participate on this coming Friday, the Commission to End Hunger listening tour, which is being organized by the Greater Chicago Food Depository. So I'm going to be going to the St. Ignatius Food Pantry in the morning. This is an official commission to end hunger that was appointed by Governor Pat Quinn, created by the legislature last year. So, you know, there are eyes being focused on this problem, but at this difficult time in the economy, hunger in this United States of America, still the richest country in the world, is a real issue.
Richest country in the history of the world, and as people point out, we have plenty of money. It's just far too concentrated in far too small a percentage of the population.
You're so right. I mean, this idea, this very notion that America's broke, I mean, that's just ridiculous. That is just propaganda that is being used to further hurt middle-income people and those who aspire to the middle income.
You know, I'm going to let you go here, but before I do, just one more thing, because you talked at the rally on Thursday about your tax proposal, the really, frankly, quite modest to get tax rates up to 45 or 49%, depending on how
much. For billionaires, yes.
Which is far below what it was during the Reagan administration.
Reagan's tax rates actually were 50%, which he had lowered tax rates to 50% and some under. But no, Ronald Reagan understood that people have to pay their fair share, and this is the lowest tax rate that those rich people have paid in about 50 years, maybe. Did I see somewhere 80? I mean, it's a very low tax rate that they're paying right now, and so it's no wonder that when it comes to funding the programs that really define the United States of America as the humane country that we believe it should be, they want to cut those. It's just incredible.
You know, and I look at the proposal that got put out there. The Obama administration couldn't get its jobs bill passed, so now it's going to try to do it piecemeal, and now they're doing it where they want to tax 0.7%, I believe. But the problem you're going to run into, and you know this in the House of Representatives, is that if you have any tax, it's going to be rejected. I don't know. How does this go forward?
Well, I think that if it does not go forward, then we certainly have to make it very clear who it is that is refusing to create jobs in the United States of America. They still insist on calling the richest people the job creators, which we know they are not, because if they were, then where are the jobs? Because they're sitting on $2 trillion worth of money. And so if they wanted to create jobs, if these wealthy corporations and rich individuals wanted to create jobs, then they're there for the taking. And we certainly know that a lot needs to be done right now in this country. And so, if they won't do it, if they're stubborn, then we have to keep pointing out who is it that's making sure that we don't have jobs. And right now it's the Republicans that are being obstructionists.
Well, Representative Schakowsky, I get into my throw the bums out rant every now and then, but you and Bernie Sanders are two that I would definitely keep in office.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
And I appreciate the time on the show. And what I've actually had people starting to send me information. Somebody sent me a blog of somebody else who went on the food stamp challenge, and I might forward that to you. And it's I'm really interested in how that's going to go, and I applaud you for doing that.
Well, if people want to email me suggestions, they can send them to janschakowsky@AOL.com.
janschakowsky@AOL.com.
Send me suggestions of how I can best do this food stamp challenge
Send those to me as well, because I would like to see how somebody lives on food stamps for a week and what kind of advice we have.
Okay.
Actually, I was talking to my audience here listening,
okay.
But you don't have to do that because you're busy.
Well, I can send you back the kinds of things I get, too.
Mike@MikeNovak.net. It's such a pleasure having you on, and I hope we can talk again soon.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Take care.
Okay. Bye.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I didn't know she was doing that. That is
that's awesome. That's like the awesome of the awesome.
Yeah,
is what that
it's tough.
I have no. I don't think I could not survive on $4 a day between my son and I. You know.
Yeah.
That would be practically impossible. And while all that was going on, a few of our listeners tweeted and Facebooked this great website. It's called the Food Stamp Challenge. I think this came from Zan. And you can go to www.myearthgarden.com/the-food-stamp-challenge. And it's how, for the month of October 11, we'll be undertaking the biggest challenge of date, that they will live on a budget equivalent to food stamps. And it's how you can do it and different tips and everything. But yeah, I think the number one thing is grow your own.
Yeah. And you shouldn't have to do that. In the richest country in the history of the world, as Jan Schakowsky points out, you should not have to try to subsist on that.
Well, we come back to the front lawns from the top of the show. Dig up your front lawn, plant a vegetable garden, help you and your neighbors out, and save a buck or two.
And in the studio, of course, let's get – do we have Margaret's cell number?
I do. I will get her on right
now. Okay, great. And in the studio, we have Mike Webb and Sarah Batka, who – and you guys understand something about what Jan Schakowsky was talking. Just to get up close to that mic there. And it's part of what you're doing. You're trying to operate a restaurant that's sustainable and bring good local food to the city of Chicago that would be the West Side. It's not even near West Side. That's the West Side in Garfield Park. And at the same time, well, tell me about, Mike, how you train people there.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wait, I better turn on your mic. That would help.
We have a 13-week culinary arts training. It's and we're working with a population that covers the whole spectrum. I mean, we're working with reentry population, with domestic violence, homeless populations. So they're very difficult populations in terms of the obstacles that they face.
Mm-hmm.
But for 13 weeks, we're providing them the skills necessary to be able to get a job in the back of the house of a restaurant.
All right. Let me ask a tough question. And I guess Margaret's here. I guess she came from my house all the way down here. That's good. Because I'm not broadcasting at my house. That's just too funny, you know. But the question I would ask her, and I can ask you, is the mission here is how do you integrate local sustainable food with helping these populations? I mean, you have the dual missions, don't you, Sarah?
We do. We've got a lot going on as far as incorporating local sustainable practices. We do have a kitchen potager garden on site that we grow vegetables and herbs to use in our dishes.
And I know that it's tough because Uncommon Ground has their organic farm on the rooftop up on Devon in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And you talk to them and you say, wow, how much of this can you actually – I mean, they use it, but it doesn't necessarily comprise the bulk of what they do in the kitchen because you can't grow that much on site, but you can use some of it.
Correct.
Right, right. And then we also have partnerships with organizations such as Growing Home, Patchwork Farms that we get a lot of our produce from.
And so that's the sustainable part of this as as well as the and look who just walked into the studio. It's Margaret Haywood. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
How's my home?
Everything looked good, although I'm a little concerned about some of the trim on the roof. But
I thought she was going to say, I'm concerned that you haven't weeded in a long time in the front. But that's a possibility. I'm sorry for the confusion, but I'm glad you're here.
It's good to be here. Thanks.
And your role with the Inspiration Kitchens is?
I'm the Director of Training and Social Enterprise for the Inspiration Corporation. So I'm in charge of our two social enterprise restaurants, which act as training centers for people who are homeless, who are trying to get back in the workforce.
And I'm glad you mentioned that there are two restaurants. There's the one in Uptown, which used to be called
Cafe 2.
Cafe 2. And I was there several years ago. I talked to somebody from Inspiration Kitchens back when I was at Gargantua Radio down the dial. And I don't even remember who it was. It was that long ago. But now you've branched out to Garfield Park. And it's not a LEED certified building, but it is you've put a lot of work into the building to make it green, right? Because it's got Tell me about some of the aspects of the building.
Well, we have applied for LEED certification. We're still in the process right now.
Oh, okay.
We think we're going to get LEED gold.
Oh, that would be excellent.
It would be excellent. So some of the things are solar tubes on the roof that will produce our hot water. Unfortunately, our solar tubes were damaged at the same time the Garfield Park Conservatory's greenhouses were damaged.
Oh, yeah.
So they're not completely up to par. One of the things we got a grant from the Illinois Clean Energy Fund was for a variable speed hood in the kitchen. You have to have a hood over all the elements that create heat in a kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Ours knows whether to turn itself up or down depending on how much heat is coming off those elements. Usually in a restaurant, the hood is just on and it's sucking all the air that you're paying to air condition right back outside.
My goodness.
And so this adjusts itself, saves a lot of money. There was a lot of recycling in the process of the demolition and rebuilding. We have furniture that's made from reclaimed barn wood. There's a lot of elements that we used. Tried to use adaptive reuse as much as possible.
So there are people that help deserving citizens and people who've caught bad breaks in life, and then there are institutions that do green work. You've combined it all, and that's what's it. Where do you get the folks who you train there? And when you're done, Margaret, I'd like Mike to talk a little bit about working with some of those people. How do they find out about this generally?
Well, we're connected to a pretty large number of nonprofit organizations, shelters, and things like that around the city of Chicago. So people are referred to us by those sorts of places. And people like Michael and the other case managers go out and spend a lot of time letting people know about the program and what's required of people who want to get our training.
And what kinds of, Mike, tell me a little bit about working with those folks in there. It's not a piece of cake for them to graduate, is it?
No, it's not without challenges. We're working with a population that, you know, on the one hand, again, has so many barriers to finding employment that we just have to initially, during assessments, figure out what those are and sometimes set some goals to help them accomplish those so that they can just simply start the training. One of the primary ones is daycare. You know, and how do we help, especially like we've been working more closely with TANF, which is, of course, the SNAP benefits, especially the population of mothers and some fathers who are in situations where at the current moment they're just not really ready to go to work. Mm-hmm. So, again, there's a lot of work in the beginning and through that 13 weeks to assist them.
We're talking, by the way, to Mike Webb, Margaret Haywood, and Sarah Batka from Inspiration Kitchens. You can go to www.inspirationkitchens.org or go to my website, mikenovak.net. I've got the links on this week's show. What kind of stuff do they learn in there, Mike?
Oh, everything. They start out initially just learning knife skills. So how to hold a knife and use one without cutting off, you know, limbs, which is a good thing because we couldn't afford it if they were.
Well, that's got to be tricky in itself. I mean, I don't like sharp knives. They're
right.
Scary.
No, they are. They really are. But no, after a couple of days, you know, they start getting their bearings and then they move on to prep kinds of activities. So in our restaurant, the students are actually doing the work that a paid employee would be doing in a restaurant that's open to the public. And so there's a lot of prepping that has to take place. They need to get the feel of the restaurant, the cooler, what's in there, the location of things, how to use the various equipment that's in that restaurant. So there's that first couple of weeks is, you know, there's a curve that they have to get up to real quick.
Mm-hmm. But you've had a pretty good success rate, haven't you?
Yeah, actually, we have. Yeah, we've got what are we, Margaret, about a 60% now graduation?
60% graduation rate.
60% graduation rate with about a 75-76% employment rate for those who graduate. You know,
didn't know there were that many jobs out there.
Oh,
I didn't
yeah.
know. It seems like, but in the food industry, there's a lot of lower paying jobs, I would assume. I mean, this is a case where I guess we're proving here that there are people who want to work and will take a job, and we're willing to train to take even a food industry job knowing that it doesn't pay well because they want a job.
Exactly. You know, but actually, we do have students who are actually able to get into some of the more higher-paying brackets. Obviously, you know, if you have a background that will allow you to get into places like schools, especially hospitals, those are areas where they are actually making more money than obviously someone coming with a criminal background who might have to start at $8.25 an hour and work their way up.
Margaret, let's talk a little bit about the business aspect. Either one. Yeah, there we go. I'm glad. We don't have enough mics in here. We'll just swap them out. The business aspect of this, how does the restaurant sustain itself through sales, or do you need to augment that?
We do need to augment it. Our restaurant on the west side that you visited is still very new, so we're still ramping up there. But we've been running the one on the north side for 6 years now, and it brings in about $200,000 a year in income. So it covers the basic restaurant costs, but mm-hmm. we have so many costs associated with training people that a normal restaurant wouldn't, like paying for this case manager, for example, here. we spend a lot of money every year just on getting bus passes for people to get to class, buying them new shoes that are non-skid for being in a kitchen, replacing IDs that people have lost. That's something like $70,000 a year
That's something I wouldn't even think about.
Yeah.
You know, other people go to school. They got shoes. They know how to get on mass transportation. I bet you're teaching some of these people how to transfer on a bus.
You know, we do have folks who are, some Chicagoans are very provincial and don't get out of their neighborhood. And when we start sending them around on job interviews, well, you got to go to the Loop or you got to go out to O'Hare. That may not be something they're comfortable with originally. So we have a lot of costs that a normal restaurant doesn't have, obviously, because we're providing support services, we're providing instruction. So the restaurants have to cover their own, the basic cost of running a restaurant, but then there's a lot of additional services that are not covered.
One of the things you should know is the food is fabulous. At least, you know, when I went to the Garfield Park restaurant. And again, I'm just going to keep hammering this so people understand. When you go to Garfield Park Conservatory, you just walk down the block along the L. You just go a little bit east, and there's the restaurant. And it's a little hard to see because it's next to the train tracks, you know. So the L sort of hides it a little bit. But there's a parking lot there, and you'll see the garden. And there is a sign, and you can see the sign on my website because I have a photo of me and Sarah there. Stop in. I mean, and I said this earlier in the show, and I'll say it again. I've said for years that what Garfield Park really needed at that place right there was a restaurant. So for the folks going to the conservatory, can walk over. Now you can walk about a half a block and just get fabulous food. Talk to me about your chef.
Well, our chef is fantastic, and I can say that our food is good with no ego involved because I have nothing to do with the menu or the recipes. That's all David in Garfield Park and Sean in Uptown. But we're trying to, with the menu, create a slightly healthier option for the neighborhood. Garfield Park is in an area where most of the restaurants are fast food, they're takeout, everything's run through the deep fryer, including the coffee. And we're trying to provide people with some alternatives. Healthier preparations, like brining food instead of using a lot of sauce to give it flavor, a lot of vegetables from our garden and other people practicing urban agriculture, like Growing Home and Growing Power. Mm-hmm. So the chef is really trying to use some things that people in the neighborhood may not be that familiar with, but when they try it, they like it, like our quinoa burger, for example. Vegetarian, a lot of people don't even know how to pronounce it, but they try it and they like it.
I like quinoa. We use it at home now, and for a lot of things, and it's great stuff. I tell you something that I had for the first time several weeks ago was spaghetti squash. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had spaghetti squash?
Yeah, I don't think so.
That's what people and we used it instead of pasta, and it was excellent. I had no idea it was that good and that it was that easy to fix, and it's better for you than pasta, really. We have another guest. The people just keep coming into the studio. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. You guys use that mic. That must be Anna Marie.
Anna Maria.
Sorry. Okay. Oh, I'm going to have to. I think I got it wrong on the website. I'll fix it. Anna Maria. Leon, is that it?
Leon.
Okay. All right. It's okay. You know, sometimes you just read it and you don't know how to pronounce it. And you're a master gardener.
I'm a master gardener in training.
In training.
Yes. And
okay.
I am a master composter. Through the University of Illinois Chicago Extension Program.
Awesome. Maybe we should take questions on composting here. But you're a master gardener training, and you're going to be helping with the garden next year?
Yes.
And I assume, Sarah, that you're going to be part of that as well. You're a master gardener, right?
I am.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Sarah is involved not only with Inspiration Kitchens, but what's the name of your...
The community garden?
The Ellisview.
Ellisview and Woodlawn.
Ellisview Cooperative Garden. And so she's involved in community gardening. And how is it you got found Inspiration Kitchens, Sarah?
I found Inspiration Kitchens on Craigslist, actually.
Are you kidding me?
No.
What were you looking for?
I was looking for an internship in social media and marketing. And
that's the reason we're here today, is because Sarah contacted me. Now, I knew Sarah through Master Gardeners and through other things, and she, I assume, you listen to the show occasionally as well.
Every Sunday.
Yay!
Ooh, I got the bell.
You got the bell.
I liked you on Facebook on my way over here, by the way.
You're one of the people. Heather was
400?
Pointing out. Where are we at right now?
We're well over 400.
We are at 408. Let's update. 409. Woo. She's real fine, my 409. Everything's a song cue, you know? We're up to 409. All right, the bell again. So Sarah got involved. And did you work in the garden this year?
No, I came on right after Labor Day.
Ah, okay. So what's going to happen? I assume you're going to do that next year. And Mike, of course, is out there putting up the scarecrows and doing everything and dealing with squirrels. When I went and visited you, the squirrels had done in some of your cabbage, which they did in my community garden as well. Mm-hmm. We got to put fences around those next year.
I'm exercising a lot of restraint right now.
Well, it's illegal to do some of the things you're thinking of there. So what plans do you have for the garden? You've got Anna Maria and Sarah, and how are you going to change things for next year?
Oh, wow. Let's see.
You even had corn. You had corn out there?
So yeah, right. We've got corn. We harvested it. We've let it
pull that just a little closer.
It's drying out right now, so we've got seed stock for next year. Uh-huh. But what we're really trying to do is, because we know we're in a food desert, and we're really trying to create a system where we can show people that whatever space you have available, you can grow food. Mm-hmm. And that's, so I'm collecting. We're collecting little small containers that, you know, half and half comes in, to large drums where we have 5 gallons of oil. To the big project is going to be like a Lesotho-style keyhole that we're working on. And Anna's really the spearhead behind that project.
Well, tell us a little bit about that, Anna.
Well, I think that one of our focuses is going to be having Inspiration Kitchens become a teaching garden, really, for you can show all kinds of ways to, like what Michael was saying, doesn't matter how much space you have. So one of the things that we've been introducing into the garden is permaculture design. And are you familiar with permaculture?
Yes, I am, but why don't you explain it, because some of my listeners might not be familiar with permaculture.
Permaculture is actually an acronym, or it's an aggregate of two words. It's permanent agriculture, and it was coined in 1978 by Bill Mollison and David Holmgren. They're out of Australia. And but what it really is that they've taken the best out of the old traditional cultures on their agricultural techniques and taken the best out of it so that you can apply it to whatever region you are, and it goes hand-in-hand with sustainable agriculture. So what Michael was talking about was having a keyhole garden. And what it is like it's a round garden bed, raised sometimes, and you have like a 2-foot path that goes in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. They put in a compost basket in the middle of the bed, and then around it they have like compost layering. So you start out with your browns and your greens, and you keep building it up to about 2 feet high. In Lesotho, they build it up to 4 feet high because their ground is just so compacted and with no nutrients. And you can grow a lot of food in this little space.
I'm not quite understanding the compost. You put compost in the bed, or the compost is the bed?
Both. So you have a basket in the middle, and you actually take your food scraps and you put
throw
it in
that
the
in
middle,
there.
But you're actually building the raised bed with sheet mulch, or you could also use just regular soil.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so. and then when, as you compost in the center, that gets added to.
When you water the keyhole, you actually water through the center so that the nutrients flow out into the bed.
Oh, I like that. It's like a compost tea.
Right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Well, except the compost tea is made from the compost pile there. Instead of you moving it, you just leave the pile in place and let the water drain out and the nutrients go into. And the biology, of course, too, because as we all know, it's the biology, stupid. Compost is biology.
Yes.
And it's, there are nutrients in gentle levels as opposed to the synthetic fertilizers, but chiefly what you're getting when you do a compost pile is that biology, which makes the soil so healthy.
Exactly. And that's my focus, is I really want to tap into the micronutrients that we want to incorporate into the soil so that the plants can absorb that. So in the restaurant, whenever we're using anything coming out of the garden, we want it to simply look good, but also be healthy for you.
Well, I've got to move along here. I want you guys to stick around, if you can, to the end of the show. I'm going to chat with you afterward. But, Margaret, I want to ask you before I let you go here about, you talked about the restaurant being in a food desert. Are the locals coming, or is it a destination, or both? How is that turning out?
Well, it's really turning out to be both. We're getting people who know our organization and are coming over from other places. They've eaten at our other restaurants before. But we're also working very hard to try to get people from the community in. Last Saturday, we had a group of, I think, 50 women who were from a church. It was the women's group from a church in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So we're very excited about that. We'd like to do more with, in addition to the location.
It wasn't the Red Hat ladies, was it?
No. The Red Hat ladies have been there as well.
They have been? Yes. Oh, okay.
Yes. In short, ladies love our restaurant.
Listen, anybody would love your restaurant. It's, the food is excellent, and it's pretty affordable.
Yeah, we're trying to keep it that way.
You have to. If you're going to succeed in that neighborhood, and if you want the locals to come, you've got to keep it affordable. And you're succeeding so far.
Yeah, so far so good.
Well, listen, thank you all, Margaret Haywood and Sarah Batka, Michael Webb, Anna Maria Leon. I finally got it right. Yeah, about the fourth time I say it happens. But thank you, first of all, for the work you're doing at this. I'm sorry. Did you end up at my house, too?
Yes. Anna, it's a beautiful house, by the way.
If you guys should have stayed. I could have had you working in the garden, the community garden today, because we're doing end of season. Yes, Heather?
I've never been to your house.
That's true. You haven't been to my house, have you? Nobody goes to my house. Nobody.
Get off my lawn.
Exactly. Let's get Kim Marson on the phone. Hang out, you guys, and I want to chat afterward. But again, please go to this restaurant. Go to Inspiration Kitchens. Go to www.inspirationkitchens.org. Go have a meal. I saw you guys were on Check Please. Is that right?
Yeah, our uptown location
the
is
old
on
one.
Check Please.
Yeah. Cafe 2.
A year and a half ago, yep.
Yeah. Because when I was eating there, I was thinking, wow, I got to do that for this. Mm-hmm. I need the people at Check Please to invite me to be on their program. Heather gives that a thumbs up here, so that's good. And if you go to the Garfield Park Conservatory, even if you don't, stop by Inspiration Kitchens, Garfield Park, and you're really, really going to like the food. You're going to like the atmosphere. You're going to like the food. You're going to like everything about it. And if you come during the growing season, go out and weed. Come in, help these people out. Go, Mike will show you what to do.
Right.
He's good at that. All right. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate having you down here. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Now I got to figure out where I am. Oh, yeah. I was going to give you a tip from the care of trees. Actually, here are some facts from the care of trees. Trees lose between 70% and 95% of their root mass when transplanted. I bet you didn't know that. That's a lot of root loss. As a rule of thumb, it takes transplanted trees 1 year for every caliper inch of trunk diameter to regenerate root mass. For example, 3 years for a 3-inch caliper tree. According to researchers at the Morton Arboretum, over 80% of all landscape tree problems originate below ground, including insufficient rooting space, poor drainage, soil compaction, roots severed during transplanting or construction, and root diseases. Young mulched trees are better able to establish roots, can grow as much as twice as fast as unmulched trees. Root tips grow throughout the year, even in winter, except during very hard freezes. As long as the ground is warm enough, roots grow. Make the care of trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
You can have a beautiful lawn and be kind to the environment, too. Hi, I'm Melinda Myers, horticulturist and gardening expert. A few simple changes in your lawn care practices, like using Milorganite Goof-Proof Organic Fertilizer, can result in a carpet of green safe for your kids and pets. Start by raising the mowing height of your lawn, if you haven't done so already. Taller grass is better able to compete with the weeds. Mow often, removing only one-third of the total height, and leave the clippings on the lawn. Consider using a push or electric mower. It's good for the wasteland and the environment. Further improve your lawn's health and greatly reduce weed problems with proper fertilization. Milorganite's organic nitrogen is slow release and won't burn your lawn, even in hot, dry weather. Plus, you don't need to water it in. And the non-staining iron helps maintain the deep green color, even in the heat of summer. So join the professionals and home gardeners who've trusted Milorganite for over 80 years. Use Milorganite for better results naturally. Available where garden supplies are sold.
Thank you, Melinda Myers. I paid a visit to Pesci's Garden Center in Des Plaines yesterday because you heard me talking about it earlier. I needed something to help get the garden beds in my neighborhood community garden ready for the winter. Now, Dr. Wally and I went with Nature's Blend with alfalfa and humate by Back to Nature Compost. Wally said to me, you know, you want to get some of that cow manure in there. And you know, this is a good time to get your beds ready for the spring. If I had my own compost, Anna Maria would advise me to use that. I would have put it down, but I didn't. So I went with Back to Nature. Nature's Blend is a balanced combination of composted cotton burrs, composted cattle manure, alfalfa, and humate. Alfalfa is high in nitrogen. Humate activates beneficial soil organisms and is an important source of humic acid and micronutrients. Mike was talking about micronutrients a second ago. Nature's Blend with alfalfa and humate works great as a top dressing or soil amendment. In this case, we're going with it as a soil amendment. Of course, cotton burr compost is famous for its ability to loosen clay soils. We don't really need to worry about that there because we've got great soil in our community garden. And it also feeds the organisms that feed your soil. Back to Nature cotton burr compost is available at Pesci's in Des Plaines in Lake Geneva, Alsip Home and Nursery, Frankfort in St. John, Indiana, and Mikey Nursery in Niles. Back to Nature. Life doesn't start with the seed. It starts with the soil.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread.
Sustainable food fundamentals. Growing good food that's good for the earth.
Cornbread said, now that's all right. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'll be ready tomorrow night. Heather's mic up on that. Pull that over there, because Heather's, you know, she sings along with this.
I am a huge Louis Jordan fan, and I do miss Mr. Mark Munger, who was our producer for a while.
Oh, yeah, you can hear Mark's voice there.
Yeah, he and I bonded over Louis Jordan. He's also a huge fan. So every time
I
hear that.
I have no idea where he is. He disappeared to Iowa or something.
He got a radio gig in Knockwood. He's growing corn and organically and making radio magic and living a happy life.
And speaking of organic growing, we have Kim Marson on the line from Sweet Home Organics. Always a pleasure to talk to who is now my favorite organic gardener. Even we've never met, and you're my favorite organic gardener.
I love it.
Sweet Home Organics is it's basically, as I've described it, and I guess you're using the phrase now, a commuter farm.
Yep.
Because you and your partner go out there, drive home, you know. You go home at the end of the day, and it ain't the farm. And the last time we talked, you were starting to do some cover crops and get things ready for the winter. Where are you right now?
Well, right now we're watching the weather like we do every year, but this is like the last round of it because we're trying to get our garlic in. And last week we were supposed to get it in, but the rain came, so now I'm waiting for the soils to be ripe enough. So hopefully it doesn't rain today. That's what I'm praying.
Oh, I don't think so. Rick said, I think he didn't forecast any rain for us. So I'm hoping that works out for you. How did the harvest go?
It was good. It was a really good year. It was a really good year. We did things much better, or certain crops did much better. we had an opportunity to learn that a section of our soil where we planted our tomatoes was much wetter and held moisture much more than made our tomato plants happy. So we'll know in future not to plant there items that don't want to be drowned out in wetness.
Yeah, that's, you know, the part of working the land is learning about the land. Now, obviously, you're rotating crops anyway because you're using organic techniques.
Oh, of course, of course.
Yeah, but that is one area that is not going to have tomatoes in the future.
Well, and we're transitioning over to where we previously had been growing cover crops for two seasons. So we're flipping. So we'll have alfalfa down in the spring. So hopefully with 2 years of cover crop, possibly more, that might help fix some of the way that soil behaves with wetness. So.
Well, that's a good question you raise, which is you've got soil there that is holding too much moisture. Mm-hmm. Are you better off trying to amend it and, you know, fight nature a little bit, or is there a crop that could grow there in a wetter area?
Exactly. Those are questions I'm looking to answer.
Oh, okay. How do you find the answer to that, though?
Well, we worked with this company called American Organics, and they supply us with their cover crop seed. And Art out there is just a brilliant guy, and he knows more in this department than I do, so I depend on his help. Part of it is we have what we call the pond that's near this space.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've contemplated, you know, maybe putting tiles, you know, to kind of help drain that wetness out.
You know, it's interesting because I've been talking to people who are doing restoration, and one of the first things they do is they go in and they rip out those tiles that farmers put
really?
In, you know. But it's you've got different things going on. But
right.
it's so interesting that I see both sides of that equation, where as a farmer you've got to put in drainage tiles, but if a restorationist takes them out of there. I was talking to Stephen Packard a few weeks ago about how they did that up on the north side, and I'm forgetting the name of the area, but now you're investigating putting them in.
Well, and truthfully, we probably won't because we don't have that kind of cash to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
So it may turn into more, can we plant something around that pond area that acts as a buffer that will actually drink up that excessive liquid? So it's all a question right now. That's part of the contemplation that we do in the wintertime. So
yeah,
it's an unknown. But at least I don't have to worry about it for next year. I've just learned the lesson that the tomatoes don't want to grow there. So I'll just keep that on my little map for, you know, 2-3 years when we come back to that side of the field and see what we do.
The place I was talking about was Deer Grove East, and we talked about the reconstruction there, the restoration up at Deer Grove East. So what did particularly well for you this year?
We were really happy with our kale, our onions. We had some really prolific broccoli. Our main harvest of that broccoli happened close to 2 months ago, and I'm still selling side shoots at the stand.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, broccoli's pretty cool. I have to admit that our broccoli, even in the community garden, keeps sending up side shoots, and I keep harvesting it. The plants don't want to give up.
You know, it makes me laugh, though, because when I look at the plant, well, kind of an evil laugh, I'm sad to admit, but, you know, like, the plant's just like, please, let me send my flowers. You keep cutting them, please. You know, it's just so desperate in some ways. It's kind of sad.
Well, except if you let it go to flower, one or two plants, you can eat the flowers and you can use them as garnish. They're really pretty cool. Well, Kim, I was in such a hurry yesterday, and yesterday was such a strange day, that I didn't put up the information on my website for you, but I'm going to do that when I get home. So
yeah.
it'll be
well,
up.
We have, We have two more, or we have one more week at the farm stand, so some folks can come visit us and say hello, and we can give our thanks for a great season.
And tell them exactly where that farm stand is.
We are near the intersection of Crane and Randall, where the exact address is 5 North 726 Crane Road, St. Charles, Illinois.
All right, and always a pleasure to talk to you. I'll put that up there, and someday I want some of that broccoli.
Absolutely, it's all yours.
All right, save it, and you can even let it go to flower. That'll be
all right.
That'll be. All right, Kim, always a pleasure. Take care. I'll talk to you.
Take care.
Bye-bye. We got a tweet from Kathleen. Said, saw the Inspiration Kitchen people in front of our house. Given the demographic, car and neighborhood, I figured drugs or real estate. She chose the latter. So she thought people were shopping for our home. She couldn't figure it out. So that's pretty funny. I'm so sorry you went to our house before you came into the studio. That's the way these things go. Thanks so much, everybody. Heather's sitting on the floor. We've run out of chairs. We say, till next week, go green.
Or go home.